Welcome to Constructing Mindsets, discussing the building blocks of our mental health. Today, we're talking about something very topical and something that's had an immediate and significant impact on all of our lives, and that is coronavirus. Whilst we'll not be able to cover everything in this episode, we want to let you know that we understand the level of human misery around the world right now, and it's really difficult. We appreciate that the virus will ultimately mean some people get the worst possible news about friends and relatives. We know that just by switching on the news, the scale of negativity and global downturn is clearly evident. And we also know that because of certain government restrictions, we won't even get the opportunity to truly say goodbye to some loved ones. If this last point resonates with you, we really encourage you to listen to episode 5 on grief by our own Hannah Shapkins to understand a little bit more about this and also some coping mechanisms. We hope you don't end up in that situation, but by being prepared, you may be able to help yourself be more resilient. So all of us have decided to come together today to discuss how we're currently feeling, the environments we're working within, and possibly shed some light on what we're going to happen and how we're going to get out the other end. So firstly, everyone, how are we all coping in the current environment and how is everyone feeling?
I think I would describe it as like I've been on a bit of a roller coaster with it, obviously, as you just get used to what's on the news and understanding what the impacts are going to be for our health service and you personally and outcomes for people and that kind of thing. And yeah, I think at one point on that roller coaster, I felt really pretty ropey, I would say, to the point where I think it's brought back some things from before where, you know, feeling a bit on the brink of just being inundated with all that information, really.
Hannah, how about you? How have you been feeling through all of this?
I started off really badly when kind of lockdown was coming and we were being sent to work from home, and I suddenly realised I was going to be stuck in the house. I started having panic attacks again. Haven't really had one in a while, so there were lots of phone calls to lots of people in tears, but it's kind of calmed out a little bit now. I mean, my main concern is mainly because obviously as an anxiety sufferer and depression, you're always told to go outside and get fresh air and go and talk to people to help, like almost practice it so that you don't end up in the same agoraphobic state I've been in before. So this is quite daunting to me, but I've kind of got into a good routine now and I'm trying really hard to find positives in the current situation.
Mine was probably the opposite way around to Hannah's. So the first 2 weeks, I was possibly the happiest I've been in months. And I think that was because I implemented some stuff very early on. Like, I knew the news was bad for my mental health, so I just turned it off. I knew social media was just people sharing the news, so I time limited that every day. And I got into a really good routine with exercise. Made the mistake last weekend of reading the news, and that kind of put me on a bit of a downer for a few days. But I've now learned to re-implement my steps, and I'm back being positive again. And it's just kind of trying to see the opportunities through it. I've got a lot I can do around my house that I've been putting off for a lot of months. So I'm just trying to use the extra time I'm getting from not commuting and not going out to get some of that stuff done, so that when we do come out the other side, I don't have to feel guilty for not doing it.
Yeah, absolutely. I definitely agree with Hannah's point about routine. I found that, you know, initially it was just a bit of a shock thinking, okay, I do work from home sometimes, I do have a routine going, but having to implement that routine every single day in the same way was actually quite difficult to kind of keep up with that, keep motivation, keep morale when I'm not feeding off the energy of other people that I normally do, say within the office or within my team. So, you know, I found things like, you know, arranging lots of calls throughout the day with different people to catch up on like how they're doing, what they're working on, was really, really helpful. And then also just making sure that I do get my morning walk in, because in the morning I need a break before I start work. I sort of get up, have breakfast, and then need to get out and about and just have a think about what's going on for the day, reset my head before I sit down and actually, you know, get on with work. So I found actually kind of getting into that routine has been really helpful. And then also breaking up the day when you finish work before I have dinner with something else to just take my mind off things, because it's a difficult situation to be in, and it's also creating routine but also some sort of variety, because routine does get quite monotonous and boring, and I definitely need some variety in some parts of my life to try and, you know, keep up that motivation. Did anyone do anything to prepare themselves prior to the lockdown? We've sort of seen so many pictures of panic buyers and things like that, which is, you know, it's such a shame that people have had to kind of go out and do that and put others at risk. But, you know, it is a natural reaction to what is going on, because people see things in the news, as you said, Louise, and they just start worrying. And the first thing they think of doing is, for example, to go out and panic buy. Or did any of you take maybe more, some more practical steps around preparation for lockdown?
I think I suppose I took some steps maybe in advance of what the government guidance was. My son's he's had a lot of breathing problems over the years. He's only four, so I suppose I was a bit quicker to kind of take him out of school before the school kind of announced that, you know, they were going to close, and they were happy with that, you know, so that helped us to get prepared. And I did just, you know, take care of what was in the cupboards and try to stock up on a few things. I certainly wasn't one of these people kind of buying 72 bog rolls in a hurry or anything like that. I don't know why people would think that that's a particular need, but I think it's something that I've been reflecting on is maybe like something that I didn't do. So I'd always thought, from having my mental health blip years ago, I recognised that sleep deprivation was an issue, and, you know, 5 nights of not sleeping was a big problem, as we talked about in kind of podcast 2. And I always thought, you know, if I get into those straits again, I'll just nip to the doctors and get some sleeping tablets, because I know that that would knock it on the head, you know, and get me back on an even keel. And I really wish that I'd got in quicker with that before they basically, you know, started to lock down your access to 111, to GP appointments. Because I have found when I was having that ropey moment a couple of weeks ago, I was thinking, if only I had a few sleeping tablets, I know that this would, you know, help tide me over. But I just couldn't get access to that support when I needed it. And I know there'll be other people out there who've had those, you know, those nights of waking up 2 o'clock in the morning and, you know, feeling the compulsion to read the news because you think that, you know, you're in imminent danger. And yeah, I hope they've managed to weather those like I have and get back on even ground.
Yeah, that's really interesting, because people won't necessarily know where to turn to if they can't turn to the NHS. And quite often, if they don't have that support system in place to be able to access, you know, the right drugs to help them sleep, or even the right drugs in terms of day-to-day life. I think people are wondering where they go to get certain things, you know, paracetamol. We've seen that become a shortage, and people get worried about actually where they can turn to. Are there any sort of other good resources apart from the NHS that people can reach out and use? I know that, Hannah, you've spoken sort of about Samaritans and Mind, and there's some other resources out there as well.
I mean, there seems to be loads going on at the moment, which has been really awesome. So, yeah, you've got all of your standards, Samaritans, Mind, loads of places are opening up resources that you might pay for free, which is really great. Dr. Chatterjee,
yes,
has some really great tips that he's going around sharing, especially to do with like grounding and sleep and, you know, keeping anxiety down. So he's a really great one to follow. One thing I found is, so I'm part of our local community support team, to help people that are in vulnerable situations, and one of the people helping us is actually a counsellor as her job, but for the time being she's actually offering free like listening services to anyone in our town. So it's also worth checking in with any like Facebook groups for your town in case there's anyone else doing similar things offering support, even if it's, you know, just someone else to talk to, because I know some of the standard ones like Samaritans are starting to really struggle. And also, if you're someone who wants to help, I know that a lot of those places are also looking for volunteers.
Yeah, okay, it's brilliant. And Louise, how about you? Is there anything else in terms of what Lucy just mentioned? Sleep deprivation is a big one, and a lot of people will be struggling to sleep during this time. What do you recommend that people can do, especially from like a mental health first aider perspective, that will help them be able to get to sleep at the end of the day and really switch off from what's going on in the world?
So there's a few that kind of pop up quite a lot. Not watching the news late at night is kind of a big one, just because if you don't have time to digest what you've seen or read. So kind of, if you do want to have a news intake, I'd probably recommend doing it earlier on in the day, just so you have some time to get some of those anxious thoughts kind of processed before you try and sleep, so they don't wake you up at all sorts of hours in the morning. Another one is not necessarily related to mental health or even what's going on at the moment, but blue light before you sleep is meant to be really disruptive. So it's getting your faces out of devices, which I know all of us are prone to doing. It's, I don't know how many of my friends, and myself included, lie in bed at night and will have a quick flick through social media because it's just switch off time. But actually, it's really disruptive to a sleep pattern, so maybe pick up a book instead, or have like a dedicated half an hour before you go to sleep where you don't have that device or constant stream of information coming towards you, and that can really be beneficial just to help you get a better sleep pattern underway. And just trying to maintain a routine, we've talked about routine a little bit already, but it's so important, natural cycles of sleep to work in a very periodic way. Everyone cycles at a different time. I certainly go to bed a lot earlier than my partner, and that's just my routine, and I am very happy with that. But trying to keep that regular, I even notice when I try and stay up late, I'll just fall asleep on the sofa at the same time anyway. So just try and stick to that routine, try and reduce the blue light and the news intake, and it just might help send you off to sleep a little bit quicker. But if it doesn't, there's nothing wrong with that. It doesn't hurt to try for half an hour and then say, nope, this isn't working, get up, change of scenery, have half an hour sat somewhere else and then try again. It can sometimes help just jerk your body back into the reaction that it needs to sleep.
Yeah, that's really great. I also find that the Headspace and Calm apps are really good. I've got Headspace and I've only recently got it, and there's been a lot of talk about it. It teaches you meditation, but it can also just kind of help you sleep. So it has sleep stories, it has sleep music and audio. And I've found that listening to that before bed also really helps me switch off. You can listen to a story and it's like a really boring story, but it's told by a lovely voice and you just can fall asleep to it. Very, very calming. So that's also really helpful. And also in terms of the meditation that you can do on there, it's anything from 2 minutes to 30 minutes. So you can just do 2 minutes every day. And at any point that you kind of feel the anxiety rising, you're getting worried about anything, and that can really help, and it's just an aid that helps you do that. So that's great. And also reading, I do find reading a book does really help me switch off, because I kind of throw myself into the world of the book and just picture myself in that completely different world and switch off from everything that's going on. Whereas sometimes social media, you think you're switching off, but obviously you're tied to what other people are doing, saying in the here and now. And I think, Hannah, you mentioned that in a previous podcast that we did about the barrier between going to work and coming home from work, and that you read a book and that was how you broke down that kind of point in your day from working to getting home, and that really helped. So I do think picking up a book in this time can be super helpful, whether fiction or non-fiction, doesn't matter, but definitely throwing yourself into it, I find really, really helps. So obviously lots of different information there and resources that kind of all of us are using, all very different, which is great. So we can talk about the curve of acceptance and finding a friend further along a curve. So this is quite a technical way of seeing the change curve. And this is all about sort of how we adapt to change. And it's really about our morale, energy, and performance, and how that changes over time when we're going through a change. So there's 7 stages. And first of all, you've sort of got the shock of like, oh my gosh, what is going on? How am I going to deal with this? Then you've got sort of the denial of, oh, you know, it's fine, you know, it won't impact upon me, I'll be okay. And then you sort of get into the anger and blame, bargaining and self-blame. And then going into a point further along the time frame where you start getting a bit depressed and confused, and that's, I think, you know, the lowest point of the change curve in terms of your morale and energy. And I think it's when we hit that point in the curve, we've got to be really aware of what we're going through, and also that other people might be at different points on that curve. And although we're all going through the same global pandemic, we're all going to be experiencing this very differently, both regards to, you know, our jobs, our families, and how we think of our kind of health and financial security. So it's definitely one thing, learning about the technical side of what might be happening. We've got to appreciate this is happening to us all differently. I think, Louise, you can sort of shed some light on this curve and the different stages. And what are your thoughts about how relevant they are to all of us?
Yeah, so I'm quite lucky that I'm possibly nearer the end of the curve, and I went through some of the slightly more downward stages quite quickly. But like we talked about in our grief podcast, everyone does go through things at different times, and it's having that appreciation that everyone will be at a different stage to you. So I guess I went through the shock quite early on of what was happening when it was just out in China, and then the denial stage probably lasted a little bit longer. I couldn't understand why people were panic buying, like, why does everyone need that amount of toilet roll and hand sanitizer? I didn't buy any, regretted that slightly later, but you know, I was at the, I don't understand why anyone's doing this. I think I probably bypassed anger, bargaining, I think, to my reassurance of, well, maybe I will work from home just in case it's something that's going to happen. And then I was quite lucky that I swept straight through the depression and confusion stage pretty quickly, and then just accepted it, built a routine and got on with it. And I will admit I've probably gone backwards down the curve and then back up again, and it takes effort. There's no point pretending that this is all really easy to stay positive. I think any one of us will admit that trying to get onto that positive streak, it does take hard work and it takes a lot of energy sometimes. But I guess one of the big things is if you can find someone moving further ahead of you on that curve, they might be able to just put their own perspective in place, and you might be able to see a way that works for you. And it might not work for you, and that's fine. And this is the difficult thing with mental health, is we are all so different that what works for one person won't work for another. So I love exercise, so home workouts are great for me. But someone else might absolutely hate that, and that might be their worst nightmare. And that's fine. There's nothing wrong with that. So I guess if everyone could look up the change curve, they might just appreciate where they are on the journey and that there is a positive to come. And it might take a little bit of time to get there, but there is a positive to come in future.
Lucy, where do you think you are on the change curve or have been? And have you noticed that particularly? You think, oh, you know, I'm definitely going through this stage.
Yeah, so I think I've definitely kind of come through the curve. And the thing is, I mean, this we're in a global pandemic, so we're likely to encounter these curves several times as it progresses. So I think we're all in the change curve of kind of the initial, okay, this is affecting our lives. It's not just out in China. So that's the first one for me. So I think on that curve, I feel like I'm definitely in problem-solving mood and I'm kind of at the end of it. But I just touch upon, I mean, like, you know, Louise, there you said about kind of skipping the anger and blame bit. And in our household, we certainly didn't skip that bit. You know, there was a, we live between London and Suffolk. And there was a day when we'd kind of gone back into London on the Monday and, you know, sent my young one to school and, you know, and then realised kind of, oh, when Boris did his announcement at 5 o'clock that everyone that should work from home should be at home now, you know, there was that kind of, well, you know, we knew this moment was coming. Why are we here? Have we put the family, you know, in more risk than we needed to? You know, and that, yeah, and I think, you know, I know from talking to others that we're not the only household where that conversation was happening, basically.
Yeah, that's really, really interesting. I mean, in terms of where I probably am on the change curve, I'm probably the same place that you are currently, Lucy, in terms of kind of problem solving number 7. But I definitely have been through most of the stages, probably not anger and blame. I never thought I was kind of in that particular place where I had anything to blame on, but you know, maybe that's to come, because as Louise said, you can go back down the change curve at any point in time, and I'm sure that as this actually evolves, we might find that we do so. And Hannah, how have you been finding things? Have you found it relates similar to what we discussed in terms of grief? Because I think that was an interesting point that's been raised about, well, you can go through a stage of grief from actually your change of working environment. So I can be grieving the fact that I'm no longer in the same working environment and routine than I was.
So I think, like, I'm just looking at the curve. I've got it up in front of me, and I just don't feel like, for me, it's a curve. I feel like it's kind of like this weird squiggly knot, because I feel like I go through a lot of them continually, like even like within a day.
Yeah.
Because I feel like the shock's just not gone. There's this really large part of me that just is kind of in that shock denial stage permanently, where I'm like, I'm not sure if this is real, and I'm not sure if I'm making it up in my head, or if it's a thing, if I'm going to wake up from a dream. But I'm also, I have an excellent routine down. I have my exercise in, I have been eating really well, I've been sleeping really well. And so I'm kind of in this weird thing where I think a lot of it's happening at once. I'm in the same sort of space as you guys, where anger and blame and the bargaining side isn't maybe necessarily playing as much, but a lot of the others just seem to be in this continuous, like, all at once.
Yeah, I mean, it's a good point to the fact that models don't always represent real life, and actually we all do experience things differently. I think especially because it's not just one big change in a way, it's changing every single day. So every single day we have to adjust where we are on the change curve, because we're taking in new information, particularly from the news and the daily briefings, which is very difficult to have to process every day. You know, it's not normal that you do get this type of information and have to be on top of the news like this. And what do people think about sort of the news and the messages that are coming across and how the media are also taking this? Because, you know, there are some views that some particular media outlets are scaremongering in a way and making things worse. I mean, in terms of the daily briefings, they're obviously factual. And for me, if I'm going to listen to the news once a day or see what's happening, it'll be around the time of the daily briefing. And I found them kind of really informative and good to listen to. But I find that listening to or looking at other news outlets actually can make things worse, because you know there's certain stories out there which you just don't really want to know about, and in a way it's better not to hear about. But everyone's view is different, so how have you found that?
I think to some degree maybe that's been, you know, part of it that was fueling my kind of anger, because anger comes when I think when you feel overwhelmed, and I was just my period of feeling overwhelmed from having seen the way it was going to go was happening just as that announcement was made by Boris. So I think that, you know, factors that don't help is that I think the briefing being done on an evening is meaning that it's less disruptive to people that work a normal day's working life, because you're getting it once you've kind of packed up and shut down your workstation for the day. But it's too close to be able to process it with a community of people, whether that's a work community or, you know, another community that you're in, before you're going to bed. So, you know, for in our house, it's, you know, it's me and my husband and other family members kind of sat there going, right, okay, I like to be able to project manage my way out of a situation. I've just received this information. It doesn't give you a absolutely crystal clear action plan. Sometimes there is just too much unknown. Right, what are we going to do? And you're all just sat there kind of looking at each other, and then it's like, okay, and now it's time for bed.
Yeah.
It's just a bit of a cocktail, isn't it? It is not the kind of mindfulness, deep breathing, inspiring stuff that you need when you're trying to get your head down, basically.
But just to add to that, I think that's probably part of the issue with our industry in general. I mean, we kind of discussed this briefly in the grief one, where the engineering head of me wants to problem solve everything. So when you only feel like you're getting part of the information because, you know, you're not in a position to need to know everything, and, like, you know, you have all those anxieties about what's happening around work, and you know that there's meetings happening, but you're not necessarily sure what's happening in them. And likewise with those government briefings, I think there's this part where you're like, I need all the information so that I can make that informed decision and start to problem solve. And when you don't have that, I think that's where a lot of that overwhelm comes from, like you were saying. Like, I think that's where a lot of my stress is coming from, because I feel like I want to find out more information about it, and I feel like I can't get it.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. There's certain things I ask myself questions like, why is that happening? And why don't we know more? And for me, it's just, well, I don't have those answers, but I think someone must have those answers. And why isn't someone talking about them if they do have the answers? And that's what sort of gets me kind of worried and riled up and thinking, you know, come on, why don't we have answers yet? But I've now taken a step back and just realised that, you know, this is so new to everyone, even those in medical science, that it's going to take a lot of time, and patience is not a virtue of mine, that's for sure. And so learning to be patient about this as it develops, and, you know, understanding that as an industry, science is trying to learn as quickly about this virus as possible. I guess it's reassuring that there are so many people out there on the front line in whatever instance trying to deal with this in some sort of way. And that definitely gives me some sort of comfort to know that so many people are actually doing good around this and trying to make change. And actually, those are the people that are out there trying to create the solutions, and they're the best place to do so. So although it's outside of our control, we can at least support those who are out there with some of it in their control anyway. Kind of on a more uplifting note, what are the steps that everyone's been taking to get through their days, to keep up on their morale? I think there's been discussion previously on teams and how you keep your teams motivated. I've seen tons of virtual pub quizzes going on over the last few weeks. It seems like every night there's a pub quiz going on, which again is great. So I think we're going to have to be very creative in terms of our social networking over media. Has anyone got any great ideas in terms of positivity, and how has everyone been keeping up their positive mindset?
So a lot of mine has been trying to find ways to stay connected to other people. So our company is currently live streaming yoga for us once a week. They pay for the classes, and we have an instructor that live streams to us. So that's a really great way for us to stay together as like a team and do something together that's not work, which is nice because obviously a lot of that social side is taken away. Outside of that, I run my own Instagram page and website called Engineer Your Mind, and through that there's a few people I help through that, and I do various help sheets and videos and things that I try and do to support others. And I think that's kind of where I get my positivity from, because I'm trying to, kind of like we're doing here, where we're trying to share all of our experiences and knowledge to help others get through this time. And I think that's kind of what's helping me get through, is knowing that there's at least like one other person I'm talking to that I'm potentially helping. And I think that's one of the really lovely things that's come out of this point, is that there seems to be so much community going around. There are so many people that live in my town that I've got to meet, and we're all helping each other. And yeah, I think that's where a lot of that positivity comes from.
Lucy, how about you?
I think there's a few different areas where I'm finding that we're more resilient than ever. Or resilience is building. So one is definitely that community bit, whether it's around the work community, you know, your neighbours. I mean, I've got to say, you know, like in my family, we have a nanny for the boys, and she's decided she's moving in with us for, you know, the next few months, so that we're all in it together and everybody can keep working, you know, which is just, never have expected that to happen. I think family resilience, I'm talking to my family in Glasgow and Newcastle, and more than I ever have done before. But that inner resilience, you know, you think, yeah, we say, I've described, come through a few tough moments with it, but still here, still keeping on, you know. And I mean, you almost look back and I think one of the things with being in Suffolk full time, I used to be absolutely terrified of spiders. Now that is looking like a pretty small problem right now, to the point where I can like pick them up and chuck them out now, you know, whereas a couple of weeks ago I would have been, you know, going into orbit about it. So it's just that as you deal with these bigger and bigger challenges, some of the smaller challenges that you have are actually diminishing to zero, because you're just getting that new sense of perspective. And I think that's really uplifting for me, a small achievement in global context, but it's good for me.
Yeah, that's a brilliant point, actually. Well, I'm hoping that other phobias can be cured then, if that's anything to go by. Louise, how about you? What are you up to? Are you, dancing is obviously one of your big things. So are you doing things around that and exercise?
Yeah, so all my classes stopped 3 weeks ago, so I teach 2 a week and they've stopped, which is a real shame, but I've kept in touch with all my students, which has been lovely. The whole brand, so it's Footsteps that I teach, they do live streams from headquarters twice a week, so I've been joining in my utility room, which isn't quite big enough, but it's entertaining nonetheless. And just various home workouts. I've never done so much yoga in such a short space of time. It's not for everyone, but I find really it is just half an hour where I do just switch off, so it's quite nice. But I also really like what Lucy said about small things. I have not yet overcome my fear of spiders, but I also haven't tried, so maybe I'll try that this weekend. But it's just little things, like I'm hoping other people can take positives from their day. I've seen people on Instagram just at the end of the day do 3 positive things that day, and sometimes it was, I cooked a nice dinner that I haven't cooked in a while, and I did that last night. I cooked a roast dinner midweek. That never happens.
Ooh, nice.
But even just little things like that, it really helps with the positive. Having a good meal can really help with your mood. Even just sitting in the garden, the weather was warm last week, that made all the difference. So yeah, it's just celebrating the little things that maybe in kind of the previous normal we wouldn't have even recognised as a thing or an event in our day. Like having dinner wasn't really an event as such, whereas now it's something I look forward to. I sit and I have a chat to my partner, and it's kind of like our time, and it's just celebrating kind of the small wins, even if that is picking up a spider and getting
Yeah, I completely agree.
No, following on from that, actually, Louise, like I said, we've started, me and my partner now get dressed for Friday night dinner, like for a date night. We actually like get dressed as if we're going to go out, even though we're obviously not, and cook ourselves a nice dinner, like just to keep some kind of routine.
Yeah, that's a really good idea. Put on some makeup for once. I'm living makeup free all week, which is great. But I actually feel like maybe I should make the effort on a Friday or Saturday night. I think that's a great idea.
I don't know. I think something that I noticed from the positive steps there is that we're all lucky enough to be in a household where there are other people around.
Yeah.
And just acknowledging that that's not the case for everybody. And does anybody have any kind of helpful hints for people where, you know, they may have ended up, for whatever reason, because the point in time when this all kicked off, they may have now be living alone.
So I had that problem when this first started, and that's when my panic attack started, because Will, my partner, wasn't at home, and we weren't really sure he was going to be coming home because of his job. So one of the things I did was I cooked myself a good week's worth of food in case I got sick and put it in the freezer. So if I did get sick, I could easily microwave myself food and not have to like put too much energy into it. So I knew I'd be able to help myself get better. So I'd recommend, you know, doing that, like I said, just in case. But I think one of the most important things is just making sure to maybe try and talk to someone else every day, preferably on like a video chat, because a lot of your communication comes through that personal video, like seeing what people are doing as you chat. So I'd recommend definitely doing that. Or if you know anyone that's living on their own, make sure you check in with them regularly, because especially with my anxiety, if I was still living on my own, which I would have been this time last year, I am petrified to think of what it would have been like for me. I'm actually really worried that it would have not been a good time for me.
I think what was said about, you know, reaching out to others, I think, you know, one of the blockers there is like a feeling of embarrassment sometimes. I mean, it was funny when I spoke to Louise about, you know, what we were going to talk about today and my feelings of being, you know, a bit overwhelmed a couple of weeks ago. One of the issues was that was on a Saturday and I felt like I didn't want to burden people in my household because they were trying to keep everything afloat. Didn't want to worry my family. Couldn't really reach out to work colleagues. And Louise said to me, well, why didn't you call me? And I just thought, yeah, that's pretty obvious, but because I've never called Louise on a Saturday before. It's to encourage people that if you're really in a low moment, call somebody, anybody. It doesn't matter. We're all human beings, you know, and somebody will want to take the call and help you out.
Yeah, I think that's really good. And I think actually one of the positive things that I've really noticed from, you know, all of this is that we're a lot more willing to talk to each other and to have proper conversations with each other about things. Especially I found at work in a team, every conversation I have with starts with at least 5 minutes, if not 10, talking about how you're getting on, what you're up to, you know, how's your day been, what are your plans for the weekend. And people are actually really interested in how you're coping and what you're up to and what support you need. And I found that it's a lot more than it was previously when, you know, normally just dive into talking about work. And I think people are a lot more willing and open to have those sort of conversations. And actually, even if someone you don't know that well, you pick up the phone to them and they need to talk. I think people are really willing to help and support people going through difficult times at the moment. And that's one of the things that I think is really positive. It is drawing together different communities at home, at work, and within the communities we live in.
Yeah, I think that's really important. I mean, one thing I've spotted where I live is I have two neighbours who both live alone, and I think every morning I spot them outside having a cup of tea in their garden, and they have a low fence between it, chatting over the fence, socially distanced, physically distanced, but and still both at home. But it's just that interaction with people who maybe they don't do it normally, but it's the same with picking up the phone. At work, I've been sending around loads of mental health emails, trying not to bombard people, but also just trying to reach out and say it doesn't really matter what you want to chat about. It could be a mental health concern, or it could just be, you know what, I haven't actually spoken to someone in a few days and I'd quite like to just have a chat. And that can instantly lift your mood. I know when I hit a bit of a bump last weekend, just speaking to someone just straight away lifted my mood and I was able to carry on my day again. Yeah, I definitely encourage anyone that's maybe feeling low. It might be a temporary thing, or it might have been unfortunately going on a little bit longer. Just pick up the phone, speak to a friend, speak to family. And I don't think anyone right now would have an issue with having that conversation, because like Hannah said, we're all willing to talk about things, we're all kind of in this together. That's the kind of, I guess, a small positive in the global pandemic, as we are all in a very similar situation and can sympathize with what's going on.
And it's keeping standing appointments as well. Just so, like, one of my friends, we were meant to be going out tomorrow to celebrate his birthday, so now we're just doing it on Skype. Like, instead of going out for brunch, we're all going to cook brunch and have it on Skype, and like things like that, like trying to keep things as normal as you can, even like a video conference.
Yeah, that's that's really great advice. So, I mean, some really great positive steps that have been taken and that are happening. It's a really good way to sort of end the podcast on that. And hopefully people will be taking this away thinking, okay, there's some great things I can do there, but I don't always need to be doing something. It might just be reaching out to talk to a friend, and hope that this discussion has really helped people deal with this crisis. And also, I think we should just say to close that we're in a valley at the moment. And that valley may be dark, and we may not know at the moment when the end is and when we're going to kind of start climbing that peak again to come out. But it will happen, and the end will be in sight. And we just got to get through this by supporting each other and making sure that we're taking those small steps in the right direction every day. You might take 2 steps forward and 3 steps back, who knows? But as long as you're at least knowing you can go forward, then I think that's just something that people can really hang their hat on and say, yeah, no, I can get through this. We'll be so much stronger as a community for it. This darkness won't last forever. And do get in touch with us via our email if you have any suggestions or would like any help. Thank you very much for listening to this episode of the podcast. We really welcome your feedback and comment. So please do get in touch at constructingmindsets@gmail.com. And so we hope to hear from you all very soon. Thank you for listening.